Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
I know everybody on this island seems so happy on this island. Everything is by design.
From WBUR Boston at NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Who cares about a Disney princess? Well, millions of little girls, for one thing, watching, learning, dressing up, modeling their dreams and expectations. The Disney princess today has come a long way from the fairy tale stories of Snow White and Cinderella. They're stronger, more independent, fierce. They're heroes, not damsels. The latest, Moana, from the South Pacific behind me here, doesn't even want to be called a princess. But off-screen, frilly dresses and tiaras still line the shelves. This hour on Point, Moana and the evolution of the Disney princess. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you taken your kids to see Moana? Is she the role model you've been waiting for? Is the princess obsession in your household? What's the mold been? What is it now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now in the studio is Rebecca Haynes from Salem State University, author of The Princess Problem, Guiding Our Girls Through the Princess-Obsessed Years. Rebecca Haynes, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Also with us from New York is Aisha Harris, culture writer at Slate. She's the host of Represent, a podcast that looks at the media on gender and race. Aisha, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you right here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Can we go all the way back to 1937 for just a minute here? This is Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, the first full-length animated feature. 1937 tells the story, of course, of a young princess, Snow White, who's banished to the woods by her evil stepmother, where she awaits an eventual rescue by her unnamed prince.
Once there was a princess.
Was the princess you?
And she fell in love.
Was it hard to do?
It was very easy. Anyone could see that the prince was charming. The only one for me.
Was he strong and handsome?
Was he big and tall?
There's nobody like him. Anywhere at all.
Oh, my goodness. Snow White and Prince Charming right there. And now we've got Moana out, just out in the last couple of weeks here. Imagines a new kind of, well, she says she's not a princess, but here's Moana, played by Aulili Cravalho, telling the demigod in this movie, Maui, Dwayne Johnson, that she's not a princess.
My job is to deliver Maui across the great ocean. I should be sailing.
It's called wayfinding, princess. It's not just sails and knots. It's seeing where you're going in your mind. Knowing where you are by knowing where you've been.
Okay, first, I'm not a princess. I'm the daughter of the chief.
Same difference.
No.
If you wear a dress and you have an animal sidekick, you're a princess.
A little Disney self-awareness right there. Aisha Harris, we'll look at the movie, but take us. You say you've written since Moana came out that we are now in a third golden age of Disney princess eye, or what princesses, the Disney princess. What are the ages, Aisha? What have we been through? Where are we now?
Well, we just heard the first part, which was obviously Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which was Disney Studios' first animated feature film. And that age was sort of the princess existed, and she was waiting for her prince. And, you know, there might have been a little bit of agency there if you look at something like Cinderella, where, you know, she has the fairy godmother to help her get the man. But for the most part, it's all focused on the princess finding her prince. And then the second golden age is what they call the Disney Renaissance, which started around 1989 with Little Mermaid. And that was sort of when Disney started taking more of a cue from musical theater and hiring people like Alan Menken, Broadway folks to write these songs. And that was also about finding a prince to some extent, although there's a little bit more progressivism to be found there. You had someone like Pocahontas, who was like the first princess of color. And then later on, you had Mulan isn't quite a princess, but she's kind of lumped in with the princesses. Mm-hmm. And now we're here with the third era. And that started with Frozen. Some would say Tangled, but I think Frozen is where we really start getting super progressive, where the story is, yes, it's about to some extent a princess finding love. But that was sort of a bait and switch, because it really, in the twist in the film, it turns out that actually, you know, it's about female friendship and sisterhood. And now we're seeing that also with Moana, where there is no prince, period, which I think is great. It's just about her. The sort of, she's more of a hero than she's a princess. She has the typical hero arc. She learns about herself and discovers new things about herself.
Rebecca Haynes, your book is called The Princess Problem. What was the problem by your lights, and are we moving out of it?
You know, the problem has to do with a lot of those retrograde messages that we see in girls' princess culture about finding a prince, finding romance, being the ultimate objective for a young girl in her life. And also, the unending message girls receive from both the films and the merchandising, the products, that beauty is the measure of a girl's worth. That's a serious consideration. And I find that actually the marketing from Disney Consumer Product Division lately is the bigger concern. I think that the films have become so much more progressive than they used to be that it's really the way that the products are produced that
you're talking about the gowns and slippers and tiaras
and
wands and dolls and all the stuff that's not on screen.
Exactly.
But we'll come to that. That's a huge wave of merchandising. But what about the females depicted on screen now? Is there a princess problem there, or is Disney out of that? Is Moana? I mean, here's one more clip from Moana where she talks about, you know, she says, let's save the world. This is hardly Waiting for Prince Charming in a way, though she's still with this demigod Maui, Dwayne Johnson, on the boat. She's still sort of talking him up, but more to get him in her service, and she's out to save the world.
In the beginning, there was only ocean.
Maui, shapeshifter, demigod of the wind and sea, let's save the world.
I'm not going on a mission with some kid.
You'd be a hero.
That's what you're all about, right?
Maui, 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 you're so amazing.
Moana, they're working the demigod Maui, but she's the hero, the heroine of this story in the end. So problem solved by your lights, Rebecca, on the screen?
You know, I think that Disney has been listening to their critics, and they've done a really nice job responding to parents' concerns. This movie shows they've been listening and understand what some of these problems are we've been discussing.
Aisha, the princess problem, is it in the rearview mirror now? Disney's now sort of breaking down the walls of for diversity and girl power and all the rest. How do you see it?
I'm always hesitant to say that anything in this manner is in the rearview mirror, but I do think we are turning a point now where Disney realizes that it's in their best interests financially and critically to, like Rebecca said, listen to their critics and their audiences. And I definitely think that hopefully we can get – I think the princess problem now even more so is that we have a princess. We have princesses, and that we really need to just get to the point. And I think Moana is sort of the tipping point where she's technically – she doesn't want to be called a princess. So maybe the next film that we see will not be about a princess. It'll be about just a girl who is going on a journey.
Going to be hard for Disney to give up that princess merchandising line here. Mark in Miami, Florida is calling. We're talking about the Disney princess and how it's changed, how she's changed over the years. Mark, thanks for calling. What have you seen? You're on the air.
I'm a 40-year-old father of a 5-year-old daughter and have been basically living, I'm going to exaggerate a little bit, the battle that you guys are talking about right now. I've always considered the Disney princess trope damaging to little girls. So when I had her, I kept away from all of them, except for one that I guess one of your guests kind of forgot, which is Brave. Also a princess that was independent and didn't follow the typical Disney trope. And I'm delighted that this is happening with Moana. The father of a 5-year-old, she's bombarded with exactly the messages, the retrograde messages you're talking about, from every angle.
Hey, Mark, you're beeping me out there. I love talking to you, but don't hit the phone that way. So you're happy with Moana? She's working better for your daughter?
What you guys are bringing out here.
Great. We've got it. I don't know what's up with the phone, but Mark, I really appreciate your call from Miami. I mean, Rebecca, there's a father of a 5-year-old who tried to keep his daughter away before. Now he's on board. Moana, here we go.
You know, I think that, again, Disney is very savvy. They recognize that they were losing the interest of parents. We saw this October that for the first time ever in recent history, girls' superhero costumes outsold girls' princess costumes. This is part of a cultural moment where
first
parents...
First time ever.
That I'm aware of, it made headlines. So, you know, this is a moment that Disney has to be responsive. They're on top of the trends. And they're trying to woo parents like Mark and say, hey, Princess isn't as bad as you think. Now, I'm concerned that when she starts going back to the previous films and the merchandise for the other characters, mm-hmm. it might bring in some of the aspects that he feels are damaging to little girls. So you have to tread carefully, as Aisha said.
Aisha, what's moving Disney here? Is it parental expectations? Is it that's where the money is somehow? What's moving them?
I mean, I think that's a huge, huge thing. And I actually think it's a great thing because for so long we've been told that stories about women, stories about people of color don't sell. That's the reason why we aren't seeing these things. And now that we're seeing, I mean, Disney now with the last few films it's made between Frozen, Moana, and also the very multicultural Big Hero 6. And we had Zootopia earlier this year, which was like sort of secretly, but not so secretly about like racial profiling. We have all these films that are like making bank right now and doing even better, both critically and commercially, collectively, than the last few Pixar films had, with the exception of something like Inside Out. So I think that money is the huge factor. And it's really no different from if you look at something like with Barbie and Mattel, like they've completely reconfigured the way that they've approached Barbie and have revamped it. And in this last year, they've seen their sales skyrocket as well. It's become more diverse. They've had more different body shapes. So I think a lot of these big markets that have marketed to girls are realizing that you need to switch it up.
We're talking today about the evolution of the Disney princess from Snow White to Moana, all the way back to Snow White here in 1937. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the evolution of the Disney princess from Snow White to Moana. They are toughening up, getting stronger, but it's still the gowns and crowns that get sold out in the merchandise part of the whole Disney empire. Behind us right here, Donny Osmond with I'll Make a Man Out of You from Mulan, based on the Chinese legend of Hua Mulan, came out in 1998. Mulan, of course, you remember here, disguised as a male soldier in order to train with the Chinese armor. She was Disney's first warrior princess, I guess adopted into the Disney princess lineup. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Does the Disney princess mold matter? Does it shape girls one way or the other? And what do your daughters respond to? Heroics or high heels? Can they twirl a skirt and hold a sword, these princess eye, and do you buy the gowns or ban them? Here's 1950, Cinderella, Disney film version of the classic fable. You know, the forlorn stepchild, Cinderella here, uses the fairy godmother to get to the special royal ball. After the ball, Cinderella tells her animal friends about her mysterious suitor, who she doesn't yet realize was an actual prince.
I'm sorry. I guess I forgot about everything. Even the time, but it was so wonderful. And he was so handsome, and when we danced, oh, I'm sure that even the prince himself couldn't have been more...
Okay, fine. Flash forward, 2012, Brave tells the story of Merida, a Scottish princess, rejects a proposed marriage. In this scene, she uses her archery skills to compete for her own hand in marriage. Brave was created by Pixar, but Disney has coronated her into the Disney Princess collection.
I am Merida, and I'll be shooting for my own hand. Merida!
Curse this dress!
Merida, stop this! Don't you dare loose another arrow!
I'm Merida, and I'll be shooting for my own hand. There's a little bit of a turnaround. Aisha Harris is with us this hour from New York, culture writer at Slate. She's been thinking about the evolution of the Disney princess. Rebecca Haynes is with us from Salem State University, author of The Princess Problem. With us here in the studio. Also with us in the studio right now, Joanna Weiss, contributor to the Boston Globe, covers media and pop culture, has daughter. Joanna, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
So you know this as a mom with the daughter in the house.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been thinking about Disney princesses ever since my daughter, who is now 12, turned about two and could articulate the word pink and started to ask for the dresses and the shoes and the things that she was seeing. And
so is the princess a problem or now a role model, or do you see the shift? Does it matter? Is it, if the gowns are still for sale, are the girls still in them?
It's complicated. I think it's very complicated for mothers of daughters because we don't want to tell our daughters, you've got to go dress up in a burlap bag every day. You know, that's not what we're emulating. The reason the girls are interested in dressing up is because they see their mother's high-heeled shoes. They see their mother's makeup. They want to emulate that and be that a little bit. I mean, in fact, that's the origin of the whole Disney princess idea in the first place. That sort of pantheon came about when a head of Disney Consumer Products in about 1999 went to a Disney on Ice show, saw a whole bunch of girls dressed up and said, hey, we can capitalize on that. Why not sell them our stuff?
Right.
And it worked.
So you're not entirely opposed to the tiara and gown. There's a fantasy life there, but did it give you pause?
I mean, one thing I've learned and I've told all parents is that it passes. That intense dress-up phase does come and go when girls age out of it. And princesses have become a younger and younger phenomenon, so I think girls age out of it earlier. The complicated thing is that I think the movies do a pretty good job today of creating these empowered princesses, these interesting multidimensional princesses. The consumer products are all about the bling. They're all about posing and primping. Of all the girls who have come to my door at Halloween dressed as Belle, not one of them has been carrying a book. And Belle's supposed to be the bookworm, but when they play, they don't play act the Disney stories, they play act the dress-up.
That was the thing that set Belle apart in this evolution, a kind of a mid-step, Aisha Harris says, from the old Where's My Prince Charming to the new empowered princess. At least Belle wanted to read. Here's a scene from Beauty and the Beast.
I can't believe it. I've never seen so many books in all my life.
You like it?
It's wonderful.
Then it's yours.
Thank you so much.
Aisha, by your lights, this was a real step in the evolution of the princess, the fact that she just was into books.
Well, I mean, this was Disney's first real stab, I think, at approaching feminism. It was the first animated feature to be written by a woman, Linda Wolverton. And she said that she explicitly, like, she went out of her way to try to make sure that the film did not mirror earlier princess films by making her a bookworm. She said there were other things that she tried to do that she did not get the green light for. And I think we see some of that in the fact that, yes, she's a bookworm, and part of the reason why she leaves her quote-unquote poor provincial town in the first place is to save her father from the Beast. But then she winds up with the Beast. So, I mean, that's it's a step in the right direction, but it definitely is nowhere near where we are today.
They were teetering back and forth for a while there. I mean, you cited Ariel in The Little Mermaid. And here's a little clip of the Princess 1998 movie. She's fiery. She's persistent. But she ultimately, Ariel, sacrifices her voice for the chance to make the prince fall in love with her. Here's the Sea Witch, Ursula Pat Carroll, asking if Ariel, Jodie Benson, will agree to the deal.
Have we got a deal?
If I become human, I'll never be with my father or sisters again.
That's right. But you'll have your man.
But you'll have your man. Aisha, it was kind of a back and forth there for a while.
For sure. I mean, that movie, I have a very near and dear. When that movie came out, I was just a kid. And to the point we were making earlier about, like, the expectations of beauty and looks, I think that I have to say, like, Disney princesses, that's one thing that is still the issue, is these expectations of what beauty can look like. And me being a little black girl growing up watching that movie, I always wanted my hair to look like Ariel's. I wanted bright red hair. Mm. And obviously that never was going
to
happen.
Do.
But yeah.
Rebecca, you know, there's so much we can look at, and people are really into this. The phone lines are full. We'll come to them in just a second. But does this really matter? How significant is the impact of one movie house's depiction of young women?
You know, I think it really does matter, because it's in discourse with messages girls receive elsewhere from our society that actually tell us the same things, right? We have media, pop culture everywhere that is fixated on women's physical appearances being really important. More important, for example, than intelligence, than reading books. So when you see some of these patterns, when you see so many white princesses and so few princesses of color, right, that privileges the white race in sort of children's popular imaginations. Mm-hmm. You see the frilly dresses nonstop, which actually is a little bit predatory. It preys on a developmental phase that girls go through, mm-hmm. where they're really obsessed with stereotypical femininity. Mm-hmm. You do have to be concerned. It seems like, oh, it's just one movie here, one movie there. But when you take it as a whole, it's so much more.
Joanna, in the house, does it feel that way? Like this really is a thumbprint on a child, on a girl?
It feels very overwhelming for a while. And because girls really are drawn to these images, and they're drawn, again, to what they see and what they perceive as the important things about them. And adults feed into that. They mm-hmm. they say, you look so pretty. That's mm-hmm. kind of your instinct as an adult when you see a girl all dressed up.
Yeah.
Aren't you beautiful?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you usually don't say the same thing when a girl's reading a book. You don't always just say, oh, aren't you wonderful? To be reading a book. So we really do reinforce it without realizing it.
There are plenty of Disney gowns in my house back in the day. Alana in Buffalo, New York. Alana, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's actually a subject I've been studying for the last, probably my entire life, actually. And I noticed the distinct difference in the last couple of Disney productions. The ones where the girls are more empowered and definitely going in the right direction in that sense. But I'm wondering if anyone else sees how the male characters have been emasculated, and if emasculation of the male characters is necessary for the empowerment of the female characters. I did notice this especially in the movie Tangled, where the male lead was just kind of doofy and incompetent. And I think the only Disney movie that I did see this done correctly, where the male character could be strong mm-hmm. without taking away from the female character, was in the Disney movie Mulan. And I'll take the response off the air.
Alana, I love it. Thank you very much for your call. I've got a little bit here from Tangled. This is 2010. Rapunzel, this is Mandy Moore. Of course, spends her life in a tower. For her birthday, she wants to venture into the world. Her mother won't let her because she says Rapunzel won't be able to protect herself. Here's a scene where Rapunzel uses a frying pan to knock out Flynn, the male figure, a bandit who stumbled upon her tower while on the run. She shoves him into a closet.
Okay, okay, okay. I've got a person in my closet. I've got a person in my closet. I've got a person in my closet! Oh, too weak to handle myself out there, huh, Mother? Well, tell that to my frying pan.
Bong and Flynn is knocked out. Aisha Harris, how about it? I mean, back in the day, the male figure, Prince Charming, was just, almost just this godlike, strong, silent archetype, maybe up on a horse. You know, the princess was running around trying to save herself and find her Prince Charming, but the male figure was above, almost touching. Now, you know, Alana sees the emasculated, goofy, doofusy males in the princess movies. What do you think, Aisha?
I think we need to be careful about saying that women becoming more empowered means automatically that men then therefore become emasculated.
But I do not think that is what she said. She said they're more empowered, but the male figures are represented as emasculated. Do you see that?
I don't see that. I especially in Moana, I feel like, I mean, the closest thing we have to sort of the prince in that movie is Maui. And Maui takes his key. Yeah, the demigod Maui, and he takes his cue from, like, the genie from Aladdin and even a little bit of Phil from Hercules. And, like, I don't see him as goofy or emasculated. I see him as just a character who he has lost faith, has lost confidence in himself and needs to get the confidence back. And same with Frozen. If you look at Kristoff, he's an Iceman and he's very, you know, he's masculine in all those ways that you would expect a Disney prince to be. So I think maybe Tangled is an exception. But even that movie, I think, I disagree that that's what's happening.
I don't know, Joanna. I mean, Maui in Moana, from the clips I've seen, he's not exactly the top of his game here, the big male figure in the movie. He's sort of out of it. I mean, he's big and he's strong, but he's lost his compass, lost his way.
He's a flawed character, yes, and a three-dimensional character, again, as opposed to that kind mm-hmm. of, you know, the prince on the pedestal. But I tend to agree with Aisha. And Frozen, I think, you know, when you look at Frozen in terms of standards of beauty, I think we've got a long way to go. But when you look at Frozen in terms of character development, I think Disney threaded the needle fairly nicely. I agree. Kristoff is a guy who did his best to try to save the princess, but in the end, it turned out that the princess was saved by another princess. It was, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think that he as a character lost any kind of power or strength. He was a prince of a guy.
Let's hear from Disney's Frozen 2013 story of Anna, a fearless princess, goes on an adventure to find her ice queen sister, Elsa, who's trapped the kingdom in winter. Here's a scene. Anna, Kristen Bell, makes the climb to Elsa's palace to bring Elsa back to Arendelle and fix up their relationship.
Goodbye, Anna.
Elsa, wait.
No, I'm just trying to protect you.
You don't have to protect me. I'm not afraid. Please don't shut me out again. Please don't slam the door. You don't have to keep your distance anymore. 'Cause for the first time in forever, I finally understand. For the first time in forever, we can fix this hand in hand.
Okay, the grown women in my studio are kind of mouthing the lyrics as we go here, and it's wonderful. Rebecca, are these films about young male modeling as well? I mean, Alana says, wait a minute, not everybody's rising up to empowerment here. Joanna doesn't see it. Aisha doesn't see it. But what about the male figures here? Does it even matter, or is this about little girls finding their way?
I think that Alana is onto something, but I wouldn't call it emasculation. What mm-hmm. I see happening is the power differential is being resolved a bit in these more modern films. We are seeing the male characters mm-hmm. start out as very big and boisterous, and I'm going to do it myself, and I'm going to come to your rescue, and I don't need a little girl around me, right? But mm-hmm. they realize there's a value in partnership. And I think as we see in Moana, there's a sense that, hey, these characters are equal. We saw that in Tangled as well. We saw that in Frozen. So I think it's a modernization of the male character, showing what the modern ideal for relationships has become of a partnership rather than a domination, a hierarchy where the man is superior to the female. But that doesn't mean that they're being emasculated.
What do you think is emerging here, Joanna? Is there something that young women, that little girls can work with? I mean, we've got swords and shields and all the rest in here, plus, you know, maybe not in Moana, but in a lot of them, there's a moment where it gets very sort of a glossy. And I mean, are these movies saying you can twirl a skirt and hold the sword? Is that the message?
Yes. And again, whether girls take that away is another question. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think there's the expectation that girls can be independent, that they can resolve their own problems, that they can find their own solutions, that sometimes, as Rebecca said, it involves a partnership with a male character, but that mm-hmm. they have a certain a sense of agency that certainly Snow White didn't have, that really Cinderella in the original didn't have, and even in the remake, it was very questionable. Mm-hmm. You know, you go back to that early source material, and I think it's very hard to spin an active, engaged princess out of some of those stories. The modern reimaginings do a much better job.
You don't have to protect me, we heard Anna saying in the Frozen. I'm not afraid.
Right, right. And again, she came to that realization on her own. It was her story arc, as opposed to an arc of forces, evil forces acting on her. There's less of a, you know, there's obviously supernatural in Frozen, but the story of, you know, Anna has that main arc, and she discovers it within herself.
It's been a long way from looking for Prince Charming in the Disney princess world. Here, of course, Beauty and the Beast, first attempt by Disney at a more progressive princess. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Time.
Tune as old as song. Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
There you see her, sitting there across the way. She don't got a lot to say, but there's something about her.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the evolution of the Disney princess from Snow White to Moana. They're getting tougher, getting stronger, toughening up, but it's still the gowns and crowns that get sold out there. Kiss the Girl from Little Mermaid behind us right here, and everybody in the studio is kind of moving with the ocean waves. Kiss the Girl. You can join us this hour. What do you think about the Disney princess and the way she's changing over the years? What do your daughters respond to? Heroics or high heels? Aisha Harris is with us, host of the Slate podcast Represent. She's a culture writer there, joins us today from New York. Rebecca Haynes is here, author of The Princess Problem, Getting Our Girls Through the Princess-Obsessed Years. And Joanna Weiss is here, contributor at the Boston Globe, covers media and pop culture, and knows what it is to raise a daughter. We've got lots of callers for all of you. Ryan in Nashville, Tennessee. Ryan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I went on a field trip with my fourth grade daughter on Tuesday to an historical home here in Nashville, and the leader of the tour group was talking about how this man married a widow who had five children, and he posed the question to all of these fourth grade girls, what did this widow need in her life to help her out?
Okay, before he married her, I guess you're saying, before he married
her. Right, before he married her, mm-hmm. He said, what did she need? She was this widow, she had five children, mm-hmm. And you could tell he was waiting for them to say, oh, she needed to get married. But all the little girls said, a job, or money, or she needs a nanny. Like, they gave all these different answers, and none of them was a husband. And these are girls who've grown up with that third kind of era that was discussed earlier by one of your panelists. And so the princesses they have seen have been very different and much more independent. And I'm not going to say all of that is just because of the princesses. I'm certain that's also from what they've heard in their homes and in their communities. But they didn't see this woman as someone who needed to be rescued. She could do it on her own.
Right.
And I thought that was just very fun and interesting. And you could tell that the poor tour guide was like...
a little flustered.
Well, I think she needs a husband.
Yeah. Well, she got one, and I hope that was a good thing for her. But yeah, the girls there saying she needs a job, she needs money, she needs a nanny. I don't know if Disney can take credit for that. I mean, it is interesting. Joanna, the point at which we're at now, if girls are no longer trapped and they're just looking for Prince Charming, now Moana goes out on this epic quest, takes on the whole save the world challenge of the great seas. In real life, of course, everybody, men and women, know you work out some combination. I mean, we have all kinds of needs for accomplishment, for companionship. I wonder just how subtle the Disney treatment can get here in helping the modern young woman figure out the balance of love, ambition, the whole thing.
I mean, modern culture is in many ways not subtle when it comes to pushing girls' empowerment. In a way, it almost feels at times like overkill, the amount that you are told girls can achieve, girls can do STEM, girls can do science, girls can do math, girls are, you know, you hear it over and over again in a way that, again, that is wonderful. And that, you know, thinking back to a previous caller, I have heard complaints that sometimes boys feel like they're not getting that same level of encouragement because there's
such
a big feeling that
the
girls
is
have
your
to
oyster.
Be pushed and pushed and pushed.
But on the other side, you continue to remind us, Rebecca, that the gowns are still out there. So is it a mixed message, or is this just the way human life fits together? You know, part of it is about mating and sexuality and flamboyance, and part of it is about, I don't know, pick up the sword or the hoe or whatever it is that gets something done.
You know, at the end of the day, as much as I'm a fan of Disney and I do really enjoy their productions, I'm also a bit cynical, and I think that co-opting some of these feminist messages is good for their bottom line. So if on the one hand you've got Walt Disney Studios producing these empowered, strong girl power style princesses now, but you've got the gowns and the crowns, and you've got the glitter and the tulle and all of the glitz and glamour, the pink frilly dresses, it really does send girls mixed messages, and it suggests to me that the ultimate goal of making money is clearly more important to the business.
For Disney.
Right?
I mean, they'll work at any lever that's in there to bring in the cash.
Yeah, and there are lots of studies, actually, that show through history, as feminism has risen, brands, corporations have co-opted feminism to sell. Think about Virginia Slims. You've come a long way, baby. Well, mm-hmm. these Disney princesses, they've
cigarette.
Come a long way, baby, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay, but Aisha, I mean, I suppose, you know, the market that they're responding to, I mean, you paint that in kind of a positive terms, that the market is more diverse. Mm-hmm. The market doesn't just want to have a canned princess shoved down its throat. If Disney responds to that and makes a profit along the way, isn't that kind of the way it's supposed to work, Aisha?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Disney is a corporation, and it's absolutely cynical. I completely agree with Rebecca. But I also think, like I said, that it is not just paying off for Disney, but I think it's also paying off for the people who they are targeting. And a lot of those people are girls and young people of color. And I think it's a positive thing. It's a reinforcement. That's one of the reasons I started my podcast, Represent, is that I did not, for so long, I did not see myself in the things I watched. Mm-hmm. And so now that we have studios actually trying to cater to these things, and, you know, not every effort is great. I mean, The Princess and the Frog, which came out in 2009, I was really excited for, but I feel like it wasn't as magical as I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it held up. The songs weren't as memorable. The story wasn't as interesting as Moana is. And I feel like, you know, Disney is now, they seem to be coming to this point now where they are both being progressive, but they're also putting out really quality stuff. And so I like the way that things are going in that direction.
Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton fame in on the music for Disney. They want those big, unforgettable songs that you can't stop singing. Will in Maine, Portland, Maine. Thanks for calling, Will. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
This is really a great program, and I think it's really awesome how progressive, these big brands are like Disney and Mattel are becoming, and how important it is for young women and girls to see the change in gender roles. But I think it's also really important, really awesome too, that young men and boys are also seeing that as well, because, you know, their perception is reality, and those same things that they perceive, those roles are just as important to change as well on the other side of things.
And you see it working out for the boys as well. What do you see in the princess films? Are there role models for boys there, or is this all really about helping girls find themselves?
Well, I don't want to make it about boys. This is about a change that's better.
What
for
a fair
women,
man!
But I think it's important that you know, there are definitely roles on both sides, and just breaking down that wall between the gender roles is so important. And one of your panelists mentioned before that there's a partnership between you know, the protagonist characters, and they work together to solve problems,
yeah,
or they're seen as equals, and that's, you know, the really way that it should be. So
Bravo says Will in Portland, Maine. Of course, the interesting thing with film is that none of the old stuff ever goes away. So you've still got Snow White, and you've still got the old original Prince Charming wait right alongside the new empowered Moana. Roberta in West Palm Beach, Florida. Roberta, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hello, thank you. I don't see such a change. I do see the Disney films as being very creative and technically beautiful, but they create a pink, P-I-N-K, culture, a girly girl culture that excludes girls that do not dress that way. For example, my granddaughter went to the dance at her school, a father-daughter dance,
okay,
and she was laughed at by what she calls the girly girls, the pink girls, who laughed at her because she wasn't wearing those princess-type, pinky, very fluffy, girly dresses. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any of the Disney films are showing girls that dress totally differently. They don't show the new gender issues that are going on right now.
Have you seen Moana, Roberta? Maybe you should take your granddaughter to that one.
Well, I will take her to see it. I've seen the clips of it.
Yeah.
I have. I don't see her dressed as, I see her dressed very much like a girl.
But a pretty strong.
I don't see that they're, the girls, are, none of them in any of the films that I've seen ever are girls that do not dress exactly like the stereotypical girl, whether it's a Hawaiian girl or whether it's a princess girl or whether it's a Swedish girl.
We've got it. Roberta, I really appreciate your call, and I wish your granddaughter very, very well there. Rebecca Haynes, what about the tyranny of the pink girls here Roberta's worried about?
You know, that's something I wrote about extensively in my book, The Princess Problem. There is, there's a study that came out of Harvard University a few years ago that found that 1 in 10 children is gender nonconforming. Now, that doesn't mean anything in the long term. It doesn't mean that these are necessarily children who are going to be gay, lesbian, trans, etc. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that one out of 10 girls just isn't interested in the pink frilly princess stuff. And those girls do feel excluded. And it's really important for parents to encourage their children to be inclusive. So if you're planning a princess party, for example, for your daughter, you've got to think sensitively about the fact that some girls might not be into that. Prepare the birthday girl to be kind, right? These are serious concerns that can have long-term effects on the kids psychologically.
Open arms to that as well. We're looking at the evolution of the Disney princess. Aisha Harrison, New York, describe Moana to us, the figure that's presented in this film, up against the girly girl, pink girl mold.
Well, I think that caller made excellent points. And, I mean, she is wearing a dress. And I think that is the part in the movie where they call out the princess thing, where Maui says, you know, if you wear a dress and you have a sidekick, you're a princess. So I think in that way, she does sort of conform to the girly girl part.
But I've seen a bunch of her out in the ocean on the raft and fighting the waves. She looks like a triathlete in full bloom.
Right. So she's like she's a gymnast, essentially, who is also wearing a dress. But I do think that this is where I say we need to maybe not put all of our stock in having our kids watch just Disney movies. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find a lot of things that are made for kids as young as 10 and under that are more inclusive in that way when it comes to gender inclusion. But I do think that, you know, Disney can only do so much, and we should never put all of our stock into just one conglomerate.
Amen. Amen and amen. Cassandra in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Cassandra, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my phone call. We have a 3.5-year-old who loves Disney princesses, wears the dresses every single day. And we started out watching, you know, the older movies, the Cinderellas, the Snow Whites, and then we moved to Tangled and now Moana and Elena of Avalor. And we think this is such a positive experience for our daughter because we're teaching her how strong these young women are, and it's a positive experience for us. They're role models, especially with the new Disney princess, Elena of Avalor. She's Hispanic. We're Mexican, and we love teaching our daughter, look at this culture, see this experience, and look how strong these women are. I think it's been nothing but positive for our daughter to have these young women as role models.
Relief and praise from Green Bay, Wisconsin. We hear it straight up, Cassandra, all of it. I appreciate your call. One more right here. Buffalo, Jed's calling. Jed, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a Filipino-American, and my daughter and I watched, and she's 7 years old, watched Moana yesterday, and she's been into Disney princesses ever since I can remember.
Yeah.
And the first time I heard that, hey, Dad, a princess looks like me and has the same hair as me. And it made me feel great. I mean, I've taught her many times that princesses and girls can do whatever they want to do, and they're as powerful as boys and men. And at the same time, she was able to relate to somebody that looks like her.
I mean,
looks like her.
Moana, right up her alley, of course, with the South Pacific thing, and as a Filipino-American and Mexican-American earlier calling in, it's great to hear people seeing themselves, their daughters seeing themselves on the screen. There's a gift right there. Our time grows short. But one more right here from Idaho. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Tom, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you see?
So So I have a six-year-old daughter, and she has watched everything from the Disney Princess catalog, from the old stuff to the new stuff. And what I really wanted to say is that I think it's up to the parents to really push whatever messages that we're trying to down to our kids. And the movie itself, it can be an example, good or bad. I mean, my daughter wears a Cinderella dress, and she likes to dress up. And she also has a Captain America shield that she runs around and beats up her older brother with. And I think as parents, we need to grab the messages from these films, not rely on them to provide some kind of model for our children. We need to do that as parents.
Yes, yes. Take them where they need to go. A little help, though, from the big cultural icons doesn't hurt. I mean, there's the Princess Dress Joanna and the Captain America shield all in one in Idaho.
Yeah, I mean, consumer products are a blessing and a curse here because, mm-hmm. you know, the consumer products are the extension of the brand. They're obviously big money for Disney. They are a way, I mean, I think it is empowering for a girl to go into the Target aisle and see a representation of herself in that aisle along with others who don't look like her. I mean, I think that is a meaningful and powerful experience. The handoff is where, though, the danger lies as well, because that's where you lose the sword, you lose the book, you lose the shield, you get on to pretty, you go to Disney and you go to the Bippity Boppity Boutique at Disney World, mm-hmm. and it's all about getting your hair done. Or you see Disney taking Merida, the movie character, with mm-hmm. the utilitarian dress that she rips, and converting her for the purposes of Disney World into the same looking character, yeah. with the off-the-shoulder dress.
We're right back there, Rebecca.
Yeah, and you know, the last two callers were absolutely correct. Active viewing with your children is crucial. If you just sit back and let them watch and don't talk about what's happening on screen with them, you never know what messages they're taking away. But if you can say, I like this about this character, I like mm-hmm. the part where they do X, your kids will learn your values and they're going to embrace them.
Aisha, is it Princess Movies Forever from Disney, or is there a Prince movie coming here? I mean, once Moana's out saving the world, is it time to bring the boys back in?
Well, I think their next film, slated, is a sort of adaptation of Jack and the Beanstalk, which at first sounds like it could be going back to the whole Prince thing. But then it also, from the description of it, it could also be more of a partnership. There's a female character as well. So I'm excited to see what's next for them.
It's been quite an arc, and it's been a lot of fun looking at it with all three of you. Aisha Harris with Represent at Slate in New York. Thank you so much for being with us, Aisha.
Thank you. It was great.
Rebecca Haynes, off of The Princess Problem. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for addressing this topic.
Joanna Weiss, it's always great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, you know what this is. Idina Menzel, she's sat right where you are, Joanna Weiss. Let It Go from Frozen. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The cold never bothered me anyway.